Quick programming note, we're going to start the show off talking baseball with Austin Varney, and then around the 36-minute mark, I'm going to have Chris Durrell come on to talk about this week's NASCAR lineups. So stick around for that, and let's get it going. All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Friday, July 22nd. I'm Doug Norrie. That's Austin Varney. Austin, how's it going?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, good. We're good. It's like ready for a full Friday. I don't like to say TJF because it's cliche, but this seems like a pretty cool Friday of baseball, and I feel like we're going to be going a while here because there's a lot to talk about. If this is your first time with us, we're DFSR.com, DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, here to help you build lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. We have a bunch of free content up on our site there to help you every single day. And then you can also grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, sorry, $29.95 a month after that, and you're all good to go. All right, dude, I'm not going to do too much of the salesy pitch at the beginning here because I think we can just get right into it. There's a full slate of games going on Friday. We're going to get to some weather concerns later that you mentioned, so I think that's something that we can definitely talk about, though it's still early. It's 9 a.m. Eastern, and weather is volatile, so I don't know if the weather report that is going on now is not necessarily going to be there at the end of the day. That being said, a lot to talk about. Let's start with pitching. I'm interested to hear your take. We did not talk about this. Sometimes we talk about things off the air to see if we're on the same page about something. Today we did not. We were talking about a concert you went to the other day instead, spent our time doing that and looking up the theater names and things like that. So not exactly productive. So I have no idea where you're going here. I'm wondering if we're on the same page. What are you looking at for pitcher?
I think there's three main guys I'm going to have most exposure to in cash and tournaments. And then after that, it's going to be a few other guys that I have like minor exposure to. And those three are Roark, Bumgarner, and McCullers.
Interesting.
I think Bumgarner is the safest for cash against the Yankees team that totes out a lot of lefties. They're not good at all against lefties or righties, though the ballpark is a little worrisome, him going from AT&T to Yankee Stadium. He's probably my top cash game option if salary wasn't a thing. If it was, I think it'd be Roark with the crazy money line favorite, -220. Against the Padres, Luis Perdomo against the Nationals is going to give up some runs. And then touching on McCullers, this Angels team is just bad. If he can get past Trout, Calhoun, and Pujols, that's a lot of strikeout upside throughout there. He's only 22 and has a 15 K-9 against lefties, so any lefties I'm not really too worried about. They might get some hits, but they'll also strike out enough of them.
Yeah, it's funny. When you said there's three pitchers, I was like, oh, good, I have three pitchers too. They're just going to be the same ones, and we're going to agree. We do not. So we agree on one of them, and that's Rourke. But I'll go step by step through my thinking here. The first is Bumgarner. My problem with Bumgarner is you touched on it, but I think it's maybe more important than we think, and that's the price, right? So yes, Bumgarner, I think I have. Well, actually, I don't even know if I have him for most overall points today, to be honest with you. So the problem with Bumgarner is the part, like you mentioned, the park hurts him for sure. The other thing that really hurts him today is he's so expensive. And his money line is so low, and the money line is highly correlated to wins, and it's actually just highly correlated to just pitcher success.
Production.
Yeah, production. And this is almost, I mean, short of like a game maybe where he faced Kershaw early in the season, which I just can't remember off the top of my head, this is the lowest money line for him all season. He's like,
definitely.
I think he's like almost a pick'em as of right now. That is just simply too low. Right, yeah, it's basically a pick'em. So that's just way too low for me to think. 100% no on DraftKings. That 13,000, there's no way I'll touch it. I'll fade it all day long. On FanDuel, I suppose it's a little closer because you can still fit some bats. We usually agree on stuff, which sometimes doesn't make the most interesting podcast. But this is I totally disagree here. I cannot. There's almost no possible way I can stand rostering even 11.5 up for Bumgarner. It just seems too. The Yankees don't strike out enough. The park hurts them. The money line's too low. I mean, is this making sense what I'm saying?
I mean, I think it's a fair point. It's just, I mean, Roark, I feel like he's – I know in cash games you're looking for safety, but you do need some upside. I don't really know how much he has. I don't know how much safety anyone else on this slate really does have. Who are you
– So the three guys I looked at, and it's really only because of price, was Roark, Cole, and Hamill. And they're all – they all fall into like this sort of milquetoasty area of not that exciting, but sort of higher floor territory that I'm kind of willing to, because I'm actually not totally worried about Bumgarner having a Kershaw-like performance where like you have to have his thing at all costs. So I'm not worried about getting buzzed off there. And at that point, I just need to find some safety in that middle tier of price. And those three guys, it's so funny. These three guys, I was looking at their stats today. They're like exactly alike. They're all, they just clone images of each other in terms of their, in terms of their numbers. They all strike out, you know, like around 7.5 per nine. They all walk around 2.5 per nine. Their xFIPs are all like a little under four, somewhere around there. They just really look very similar. They're not exciting, but the money lines, especially on FanDuel, really, really helped them. Like Rourke's, you said Rourke's minus 200, Cole's a minus 200, and I think Hamill was in that area as
like
well.
155, 160.
Yeah, 165, 170, a little lower. I think that you can take the risk on losing a little bit of upside with the strikeouts to roster one of those three guys and grab some high win expectancy points on FanDuel. And that's kind of where I'm looking. I mean, are you just totally off that idea?
No, I think it's definitely fair, especially if there's offenses you think are worth paying up for. The Red Sox, obviously 16 hits in past two games. So yeah, I think it's good. With Hamill, it's really if the lefties can do anything. If he can get past the lefties, he's dominant against righties. And, you know, the Cubs are going to score runs against Jimmy Nelson.
Right, and the Brewers just don't have much in the way of lefty bats. I mean, like, so they, you know,
it's new and Heiss and Jeanette.
Right, and so those two guys, and after that, there's really nothing. And they have, I mean, they have some brutal bats in that lineup. So I'm not totally worried about them putting a hurting on him, even though the ballpark doesn't help him that much. You know, Rourke has the San Diego's is still bad against righties. They still strike out a lot. He's pitching at home. I love the money line there. Cole, you know, he has the good park in Pittsburgh. Again, his strikeout numbers don't wow you, but the Pirates will pitch him a little longer into games than they do for some other pitchers on their staff. So I think I'm totally fine grabbing money lines. Now, it's a little different on DraftKings because Rourke is 10-5 on over there, and I wouldn't do it. I would really just kind of focus on Cole and Hamill there at both under 8K. I love that they're both under 8K there. Again, I'm sacrificing strikeout upside for safety, I think, in terms of who they're facing.
And yeah, I think Cole has a little bit of upside.
With strikeouts?
Yeah, I think he does. If correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he's had like a couple really big strikeout games over the last 2 years.
Yeah, I've had this like one game stuck in my head from earlier in this year where he pitched like seven innings and had something like zero strikeouts, and I rostered him, so that's probably, I mean, I know that he strikes out at like 7 per 9, but that lack of strikeout game that he had early in the season is still sort of stuck in my head in terms of. So I just think like he's a low strikeout guy, which that's just more of my own mental problem than it is an actual stat problem. And the only other thing, I'll touch on the McCullers thing. McCullers has the highest strikeout upside of anyone on the slate for sure. My worry with him is he's just a classic. He has tons of strikeout ability, but he also has severe control. I mean, he sacrifices control for strikeouts sometimes. Or
yeah, he's a poor man's like Carrasco or Salazar, really.
Right. So like 11.5 per nine strikeout, 5.5 per nine walk. That is so high. That is, I think we talked about it last time he pitched. And we'll probably talk about him every time he pitches because these numbers
are so much upside.
Right, but these numbers are so wonky. Like you just don't see a 5.5 walk guy with a 3.38 xFIP because those walks will translate usually to runs or to expected runs, but they just don't for him for some reason because he either strikes the guy out or he walks them. I mean, those are basically the only, he's a two true outcome pitcher sort of. Yeah. So I'm just worried about that. The Angels don't strike out a ton, even though they're not very good, and they've been a little better lately. They're not a great team, obviously, but they don't strike out a ton. I don't know. I could see. It's weird. I'm surprised. I thought we were going to be on the same page with these pitchers, but we're just not. So it's kind of throwing me off a little bit. But it just actually speaks to now. I mean, we've now said about five or six pitchers that you can consider here.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple other ones we might.
Who else do you have in mind?
I think Darvish and Fulmer are going to be two guys that people have exposure to. I don't know how much I love either of them. Darvish, I don't think he's fully stretched out yet, so I don't think he's going to get his 110 pitches that we want out of Darvish.
Yeah, it's a shame too because when he's pitched, he's been really good.
Yeah,
his numbers look great, but he just doesn't hang around long enough in games.
Yeah, in Fulmer, the White Sox strike out a lot, but he is in a bad ballpark. He's in U.S. Cellular. The White Sox have been hitting a lot better lately. So, but he does have strikeout upside, obviously. You know, he's shown it in his short stint in the majors. So, yeah. I think those two. I think Shoemaker, I don't like him, but I think people will have exposure to him.
Yeah, he's a huge dog. I was actually surprised when I looked at it because I was just kind of running down some money lines this morning. But because he faces McCullers, he comes in as a pretty it seems like +150 or something like that. I don't think it's really hard to go there if you're that worried about a win on your side, especially on FanDuel. But Fulmer's a guy that I think people get there on a little bit more than they should be because the ERA is so low.
He's going to regress.
Exactly. 2.13 ERA doesn't look sustainable considering. Just his peripherals are fine, you know, eight strikeouts per nine, a little less than three walks. Those are good. They're not great. They're not 2.13 ERA good. His xFIP is almost four, really, 3.9. So he's due for a little bit of you would think run bad with BABIP, 250 BABIP, 84% strand rate. So those numbers to me don't excite me, especially because he's expensive now because he's got nine wins and he's got a low ERA. So when a guy climbs into that price tier, but it's kind of built on the back of luck, then I'm pretty bearish on situations like that.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, good. We've covered talked about a ton of different pitchers. I think this is going to be one thing where I look during the course of the day to see sort of how the line is moving on certain guys. Like, for instance, I could see Cole's money line dropping a little bit over the course of the day. I don't see it happen so much for Rourke because...
I think Bumgarner's going to go up a lot.
You think so? Because it's... Well, I don't know. Because that would be a swing up and down then because he started at -123 and is down to -105. And that's just headed in the wrong direction for him. I mean, unless you think that was like Yankee public money coming in or something, but I'm not sure.
I think it might have something to do with the wind because right now it's blowing out 15 miles an hour to left. And, of course, that's a downgrade for the lefty pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, I think both of us, as you know, Joe backs up, all of this is contingent on the weather. If something goes wrong with the weather, you know, you can take us off the table because, you know, right now it's so early we have no clue. What the weather's going to do throughout the day.
And if this is your first time with DFS baseball, then – maybe you're not totally aware of how this works. And even if you've been doing it, weather is such a big factor, but it's especially problematic for pitchers because, I mean, the hitters, you can survive a rain delay and not really worry about it. A hitter's not going to get pulled, obviously. But a pitcher who gets a rain delay halfway through a start could be really a problem because, you know, there is a breaking point where you've sat too long and they just don't want to throw you back out there with your arm because you've been sitting kind of, you know, just sitting dead for a while. So if there's rain delays on the horizon, and this is why it's really important to check weather. And actually, one more thing. It's really important to check weather, but it's also really important to check weather experts. It can be very problematic. I see this a lot in our chat room. So we have a free chat room up on the site where people are in there talking baseball all day, and I encourage you to check it out. It's fun. I mean, I've been in there pretty much all week. But I get a little worried when we're talking about weather, and there's one or two things that people bring up as reasons for or against playing a person for weather.
Weather?
Well, actually, no, I wish. That actually seems more accurate than some of the things I'm about to mention. One is, I live in such and such a place. I'm looking outside. It looks fine. I get why people do that. It makes sense. Like, you live in a place, you're geographically located, but I try to encourage people, like, saying that's just not the way to analyze weather, right? So, but I get why you do it. I do the same thing. I live in the New York area, and it's easy to look outside and say, it's raining, whatever. But I really encourage people to not look at that. We're not forecasting what's happening right now above you. It's forecasting what's going to happen around first pitch or, midway through the third inning. So that's the one thing. The other thing is looking – and that one's way more problematic than the next one, which was looking at base weather data like on weather.com, which is accurate, but, you know, seeing like, percentage chances and trying to determine what those percentages mean, right? So – because unless you're a meteorologist, then call me because we could use you on staff. But otherwise, it's better to go and look at weather experts and see what they're saying about these. And there's plenty out there in DFS. Like, we have one that writes for our site, Mark, who's great, who puts up content pretty regularly. But there are just enough guys out there that I would encourage you to read them. That's my little diatribe on weather. I mean, are you with me on that? Like, I get worried about stuff like that when people try to make those determinations on their own.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And just touching on the pitchers once again, like, it's especially true for young guys and aces because that's something that the team's relying on for a long time.
Right.
So, you know, if it's a guy like Luis Perdomo, he might take the hill. Or if it's a guy, you know, someone that is just there for the innings, just filling innings, I wouldn't worry about them as much. But, you know, a Bumgarner or one of these young guys out here today, Archie Bradley, Lance McCullers, you know, if they sit for an hour and a half, they're not coming back.
Yeah, those guys aren't coming back, and that's a problem. And you just need to just keep an eye on it. And if there's a chance of delay, luckily I feel like there are enough pitching options tonight that you're not gonna need to take the risk. Like, so for instance, the other night it happened with Carlos Martinez, where he was the clear cash game play against the Padres, but there was a pretty heavy threat of rain, and they just ended up not playing the game. That's a situation where I actually took out a decent amount of my buy-ins for the night, mm-hmm. because I just wasn't comfortable with plan B, and there was just too many downsides. There was a downside of me not playing him and him playing, and then there was a downside of me playing him and him not playing, and then the plan B options weren't good enough. So I'd encourage you to try to make good decisions all across the board, just because you have something in. If the situation turns south on you with weather or whatever, just don't play as much. This is if it's your money and you value your bankroll, make good decisions. All right, we have I think we've thoroughly covered pitchers and weather and any final thoughts on pitchers, or we think is that pretty much good?
Well, just that point that you just touched on, I think there's also another angle at that is where say everyone's going to be on Bumgarner tonight or something, where you think you can get an edge in the opposite way, where you think that everyone's going to pivot off of him onto someone that you really think is going to get blown up, and then you go a different way in tournaments. I just think that's a good angle to take if you think you have some kind of edge that the public's not seeing.
Yeah, and I should clarify. I primarily play only 50-50 cash games. Yeah, it's just there's a lot of reasons for it, but mostly I'm just a pretty risk adverse, like low level grinded out kind of person. Right. So not low level, but just like a grinded out kind of person, where I'm just fine sacrificing some of those big tournament wins by just playing positive EV stuff all day in and day out, all different slates. So when I'm talking, I'm mostly referring to cash games. All right, let's move on to the bats today. We have a couple interesting situations in terms of overs for the day. Red Sox are the highest. I have them at 6.01. Rockies right now, I have them at 5.74. And Nationals at 5.54. And then there's a drop-off. I guess the Tigers are a little north of five also. Go Tigers. So there are those teams come in at the highest run line expectations on the day. There's some values in there for sure. Let's start off with catcher. We can make the distinction between FanDuel and DraftKings because sometimes things aren't totally the same at catcher between the two sites. But where are we looking at catcher today?
FanDuel, it's really just a different day. The same thing with Victor Martinez and Cash. I'm going to do what I can to get him in there against Jacob Turner. But other than that, I don't really love the position too much.
Yeah.
I think if Miguel Montero moves up a little bit, you know, maybe into 5-4 area, I think he's definitely in play. You know, Sandy Leon looks like Johnny Bench for some reason. He doesn't get out.
Yeah.
And then Russell Martin, you know, Blue Jays have nearly 5.1 run total. If he's hitting fourth or fifth against Paxton, I like him in the Rogers Center. But there's no one that really stands out to me. There's no Derek Norris against the lefty or Posey against the lefty, but I mean, I think there's a lot of different guys. I think you can wait till the lineups come out and just punt as well. I think that's viable.
Yeah, the system's been doing that more and more lately for catcher. Like it did it with Salty Lamacchia last night at 2,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, it do it with like Darnold sometimes at 2,000. So the catcher is just hard. There's only a few catchers that are really adequate on offense, and those guys, and because they are, their prices climb a little too much. Like I think V-Mart's getting close to that breaking point at 3,900. It's a good matchup, but it's expensive. He's good, but he's not a great, great hitter. And when you're at 4,000, you need to be pretty good. So yeah. I'm just wondering if he's climbing up to that tier of maybe out of play. I'm with you. I like Martin probably most. Good ballpark, facing a lefty. Toronto's in a good spot there with ready bats. So I would love if he just like didn't. They screw around their lineup a little bit. So sometimes it's hard to know where he's going to hit. But if he hit like 5 or 6, I think I'd be fine with it.
Yeah, and there's really no one else I am looking at a catcher. I think those are the guys, or you just wait till lineups come out and punt it.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Just like I said, some of those guys just they climb too much in terms of price, and then you're just kind of you're priced out of the opportunity. All right, let's go on to first base. We got a couple guys here. The system's been loving Miggy lately. He finally went. I think he went yard last night.
In a short game.
Right. So he finally. It's like the first time in I don't know 5 consecutive days where I didn't play him. So 100% guaranteed a home run when that lineup was finally put in. I mean, I played Ortiz, so it didn't really matter, but. We've been on the Tigers so much lately. They've been running really bad in terms of BABIP, and the prices have dropped, especially on him. And people, I don't know, got some vitriol about continuing to recommend Tigers over many, many days. But again, he finally goes yard. He's still cheap. What are you looking at first base?
I think three of them. I got three main guys. I think one of them might be coming out of left field a little bit, but let's see. First one is going to be Ortiz. I think that's probably where the chalk is going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, 14 miles an hour blowing out in Fenway against a bad righty. He's just on fire. I don't understand how he – supposedly it takes him 4 hours to get up in the morning, and he's hitting 460-foot bombs.
What do you mean it takes him 4 hours to get up in the morning?
On the regular – yeah, that's it, that's insane. And then
What do you mean? It takes him four hours to get up?
Yeah, I guess someone said his Achilles are so bad. Uh-huh. That he has, like, he can't get out of bed without stretching for, like, 45 minutes. And then when he's walking around, he's limping the entire morning until he gets there and has to stretch out with the trainers and stuff.
Huh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Yeah, I guess that's why he said he's, because Trout asked him at the All-Star game, you know, why are you retiring? He said, give me your legs and I'll play another 20 years.
Interesting. Yeah, because he's swinging the bat like a monster. But
that's insane. Yeah.
So, if you're not paying up for pitching, he's pretty clear place to go. After him, yeah. Who do you like?
I like Adam Lind and Freddie Freeman. Oh. Estrada gives up a ton of home runs. I don't understand why this run total is so low for the Mariners, but I think they exceed it. Estrada gives up a ton of home runs in the Rogers Center. Lynn hits lefties for a lot of power. And Freddie Freeman, self-explanatory, really is in Coors Field against a righty. So.
Yeah, that is interesting on the run line for the Mariners against Estrada. I mean, Estrada's fine-ish, but they...
I expected it to be around like 4.3 or something, 4.2.
Yeah, oh, for the Mariners.
Yeah.
Yeah. They actually got bet down under four. So it also strikes me as a little odd. Estrada's been, I'm just looking up his numbers real quick. I mean, he's been fine. Actually, he really hasn't been fine. 4.5 xFIP. Yeah, like that. That is weird. Actually, that's a situation where maybe bet the over on that because I'm with you. I'm confused on that too. The Mariners have some lefty bats in there. I like that. Yeah, I'm going to investigate that a little bit. I mean, it could be a roof open, roof closed thing too, which I know there's...
And I'm not as high on the Blue Jays either at 5 and 1.13. So I think, you know, Mariners in the over there is pretty good.
Yeah, that might be a line to investigate. Who was the other guy you said after Lind?
Freddie Freeman.
Oh, Freddie. Yeah, he was chalk last night and he didn't, I think he went 0-for-4, but he was the chalk play coming out of Coors. His problem for me is not, it's kind of a Trout problem too. Well, not as big on Trout. They're not the same player, but it's that he's good, but his team sucks. And when your team stinks, you can only be so good. So they have a pretty low run line, even for Coors. I think they're like in the mid high fours. I think.
That's so sad.
Right. That's awful. Yeah, 4.7. 4.7 for Coors means you are so bad. I know Jonathan Gray is good and is just like, you know, a pretty live arm. But for them to start at 5.2 and go down to 4.7 just is an indictment on the team, really. And that's my problem with Freeman. It's not him. If he was on mostly any other team here, he'd be in play. But the team, Ender and Ciarte, Eric Ibar, Markakis, these guys are terrible. And
it's bad.
And so you're just not going to get as many at-bat plate appearance opportunities when the rest of your team just is almost like guaranteed outs every time. So that's my only issue with Freeman. I'd probably play Miggy over him, honestly, at the same price point on FanDuel. I just think against Turner, good park, Miggy's coming way cheap for his skill set. His team is much better. I think I'd take him. I would take Miggy heads up over Freeman today.
I think Rizzo's right in that little section too against Jimmy Nelson. Nelson's pretty bad against lefties. You know, Rizzo, he goes under the radar, but he's such a good hitter.
What about Votto?
Lefties, righties.
Votto against Bradley.
I like Bradley, but not tonight. I'm not saying I like him. I like him as a pitcher, but I think Votto's not at all to the extreme of the Braves. But the Reds just lay down and do nothing so many nights.
Well, they have a bad team too. Like Billy Hamilton, he stinks. You know, Zach Cozart hitting leanoff. These guys are not good. I mean, Bruce behind him's having an okay season. Adam Duvall is like three win guts blowing in away from being back in the minors, as far as I'm concerned. Like, if he's just been so hot on home runs, he just doesn't do anything else but hit a home run or strike out. And that, I mean, like, again, like a couple of those balls scrape the warning track and don't go out, and he's looking like a below replacement level player instead of an all-star. It's really, really weird. All right, we're going way long today. All right, so I got NASCAR coming up at the end of this. Let's go on to second base. Give me a couple guys to consider here.
Two guys, Dozier and Cano. Not really going past that in cash, maybe a little bit in tournaments, but like I said with Estrada, you know, he gives up a ton of home runs. Lefties hit him well. Cano moving from a horrible park to top 10. Dozier going against Eduardo Rodriguez in Fenway, short monster in the left, or not short, it's very tall, but, you know, short in distance. Yeah, Dozier hits the changeup really well. Eduardo Rodriguez, that's his favorite pitch to throw for strikes. And there's really no one else that I love. I think if I am going to be paying up, I'll probably wait. And this is another position I think you can wait for some speed at the top of an order, like Profar or maybe Utley or, I don't know, Jace Peterson and Coors. Those, he's very expensive. So I doubt something like that. But and another guy, I like Hamill, like you mentioned, but I think Jeanette is a guy that could do damage if anyone's going to do it. So I don't mind him either.
Yeah, but real quick on Eduardo Rodriguez for, you know, the Twins today. He came out last game and there was some, I guess there was like some talk that he had been tipping pitches before his last, you know, up until that point. But he goes out and pitches seven innings against the Yankees. He only struck out a batter. And to me, that is just not, it's not a sign that a guy's figured it out. I know some people are going to look and be like, oh, he won seven innings last time in Yankee Stadium, got the win or whatever. But he won seven innings. He walked two and struck out one. That's terrible. And so that just means, I mean, you can induce a lot of weak contact and sort of get away with it, but not really for the long term. You just, those will just, that'll come back to bite you eventually. So I'm not totally convinced that he's quote unquote figured it out at yet. And I'm happy to buy a little bit on the Twins in the idea that he hasn't, because, like, I don't know, those numbers just don't strike me as scary at all. All right, hit me up for shortstop.
Shortstop, it's another position where I'm really just not overly confident. There's not really one guy that's sticking out. I think Tulowitzki is really interesting against the lefty in the Rogers Center. I think Bogaerts is, of course, interesting with a team with a 6-run total in Fenway, 15 miles per hour blowing out, like I said. But other than that, there's not really, you know, one guy that I just love. So if you're paying up, I think you look for a guy that moved up in the lineup, maybe like just Marcus Semien. Not saying him tonight, but I'm just saying he's a guy that sometimes just hits second randomly.
Trey Turner. So,
yeah, Trey Turner, something like that. Eric Ibar, maybe he moves into second. I don't know. But other than that, if I'm paying down, I think it's Bogaerts, Tulowitzki, and maybe even Brandon Crawford. I don't like the Giants at all today against Tanaka, but Crawford is used to hitting these, having to hit it 400,000 feet to get it out at right field. Here he's got to hit it 314. So I think he might be able to slap one out in tournaments only, though.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about shortstop here paying up because I just don't plan on spending a lot for pitching. So I'm pretty confident that there'll be able to a couple of positions where I can even possibly overpay just for raw points. I don't think you actually are overpaying for guys like Tulo or Bogaerts today. Both are in the mid 3,000s on FanDuel. So a little bit different on DraftKings. Although, I mean, even Bogaerts, 4,100 on DraftKings, that's pretty good. Sure. Yeah, that's pretty fair pricing. So, I, you know what, never mind. Tulowitzki's 3,300 on DraftKings. So between those, I can't imagine a situation getting away from either of those two guys. The raw points plus the prices are totally excellent. Totally excellent. God, that sounds like I'm thinking junior high. All right, let's go on to third base. Give me a couple guys here.
There's a ton I like, but I think the Rogers Center's game is probably my favorite of the bunch. Donaldson and Seager. I mentioned both the matchups I like a lot. I think another place you can go might be Jake Lamb against Straley. I haven't really touched on that game, but it has a 9.5 over-under. We touched on it with Votto. Mm-hmm. But Lamb destroys righties. He goes under the radar as well. He's destroys righties. But Chris Bryant's interesting. Justin Turner hit two home runs off of Strasburg, which was not expected.
Total brutal. Yeah. That was very weird. Very, very weird game. Strasburg had a very odd line. Yeah.
Yeah. Luckily, I didn't play, but I was looking at the box scores and I was, oh, yeah. Wow. But yeah, I like Turner against a righty. That's really it. I mean, maybe Longoria against a lefty, but it's in the OCO, so he's going to have to hit it a mile to get it out. And then, of course, you can always consider anyone in Coors Field if the, you know, if you think the price is right and you have the room.
Yeah, back to Lamb for a second. One of Lamb's issues is it's sort of in that same area as like Freeman, right? I mean, different because the team is good. The Diamondbacks' problem is they don't have any other lefty bats. So, yep. I mean, they have Michael Bourne and Lamb, and that's really it. And Bourne is not a great hitter by any means. So righties have less of a problem with them because they just don't have a lot of threats down the lineup that can then get to you. And that hurts Lamb in general because it hurts the team against righties, if that makes sense. So
yeah, Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying that that's his biggest issue, right? Is that like the Diamondbacks just aren't going to will struggle over the long term to put up runs against righties, mm-hmm. just because they just don't have a lot of the righties can get them out consistently because they just don't stagger the lineup enough.
Yeah, I guess that's definitely true. But I guess there is maybe a small advantage to that where there's a better chance he's going to see a righty arm out of the bullpen.
True.
Opposed to a team like the Mariners, where maybe the Blue Jays just throw in Brett Cecil. He goes, you know, Aoki, Smith, Cano. And then all he has to do is get through one righty with Cruz, although it's a big righty. And then he can go Cruz, Seager, and Lind. And there's, you know, that main core of that lineup, all lefties. And lefty-lefty is real tough. So, I mean, I think that's definitely true as the whole game goes on. But towards the later innings, I think it's a better chance that he sees a righty opposed to a lefty out of the pen.
Yeah, again, our system is a little low on these Seattle guys. And I'm glad you pointed this out because I'm going to investigate this. It's due in part to the money line. And, you know, not the whole thing, but...
It's weird.
It is weird. And so this is something I'm going to investigate once we finish up the show. Let's close it off with the outfield. I'm just going to point out one thing just before we start to get it out of the way. It looks like someone made a mistake on FanDuel where Carlos Gonzalez is only 3,500 today against, and I know it's against Tehran, who's...
It's like the fifth time this has happened. It's weird.
Well, he was 4,200 yesterday, and yeah. He just dropped 700. It's like, that just seems like an algorithm mistake more than anything. Like, he was 4,200 and something like 87% owned in cash games. So, really, no matter which way FanDuel is running their algorithm in terms of like what a guy should be priced at, whether it's the splits or recent ownership or recent performance, nothing would suggest that he should have dropped this much. So he's lock and load, should be 100% play on FanDuel for cash games today at 3,500. After him, who are you looking at?
Well, in tournaments, my mind says to fade him, but that is where you're challenged in tournaments as a tournament guy.
Right.
That's where you're like, all right, do I play the fade on Cargo at 3,500 in cores against a guy that struggles against lefties? Maybe not, honestly. But other than that, I'm always a guy, I like to go with full teams in outfield. I don't know why. I mean, I don't mind the one-offs, but like someone like the Twins today, Sano, Grossman, and maybe Kepler. I don't really like Kepler that much, but Sano and Grossman, if they see the top of the lineup, I really like them. Sano, all he has to do is bunt it over the Green Monster. Yep. That guy has so much power. And then Seth Smith, Nelson Cruz. I really like the Seattle team in tournaments. The cash games, their run lines worrying me a lot. But other than that, I think someone for the Giants is going to hit one out. I can see it being Pagan in right field. He hits fastball as well, so I don't mind him.
Yeah, I think those stacks make sense, especially from a tournament perspective. You know, when you're talking about fading Gonzalez, I think you can make a case. Okay, so for tournaments, you can really make a case to fade or play just about any player in baseball, right? So it's hard because some people will say in the chat room, like, oh, do you think this so-and-so is a good player for a tournament? I'm like, well, at some point, anybody's a good player for a tournament, really, depending on how – I mean, now, is it –
How large the field is.
Yeah, is it likely that player A is going to do well? It depends, right? I don't know. Like, if you're facing Kershaw, it's unlikely. Are there times where Kershaw lets up hit? Well, not anymore. He's going to go in the DL, but, you know, there's times like – you know, yesterday it didn't seem to make sense to play the Dodgers against Strasburg, and they scored the most runs in the early slate. So I think that for a tournament, you can just about make a case for anybody. It's just by levels of degrees how safe it is or how much upside. And Gonzalez is like that. Should he be 100% owned in tournaments? No. Should he be 50% owned? Probably not, right? Actually, I don't know.
He should be.
I hope he is.
That's going to be tough.
Well, here's the thing. If you thought he was going to be 50% owned in tournaments, you shouldn't play him at all, almost.
No,
because right, exactly. So it's interesting for him. The pricing is so wrong. I don't know. I like for cash games. I think Harper's still low at 4,200. He looks fine. Even Hayward's prices come way down in the short term.
And you can steal on Nelson too. That's a big guy.
Yeah, he's hitting a little lower in the order now. Like he's hitting fifth or he's hitting sixth now, which hurts him. But the prices come down accordingly. He's only 2,700 on FanDuel. That's a really fair price. Polanco was a late scratch yesterday because of the flu. So if that carries over into today, Joyce hit cleanup for them yesterday. Went yard. Optimal lineup guy at the last second. So he'd be interesting at 2,000 on FanDuel. So this is we always kind of give the little caveat for this early in the morning that it's just going to sort of see how things shake out over the course of the day. Even like a guy like McCutchen is still pretty cheap, 3,300. There's a lot of options at outfield today.
And we really haven't even touched on one game with a 9.5 over-under, and that's the Orioles-Indians game.
Hmm.
What are you seeing here? Because Bundy is arguably the top pitcher prospect in baseball. So I'm really not looking to target him, though in Camden Yards I could see maybe a Lindor or Kipnis one-off, maybe Santana. And then Bauer on the other side, he's like a walker strikeout guy.
Yeah.
I don't know how much upside there is in that, but I think maybe a one-off in the outfield, a Trumbo, an Adam Jones, maybe a Chris Davis at first. I think those guys are interesting. So I think someone was if wondering about that game. It's what's your take on it?
It seems like a meet in the middle game where I just don't like any side of it, sort of. Yep. So the bats kind of fall in that average range. I don't mind Machado's price is a little lower, so he's I can stomach him probably. But it's just one of those. There's other bad arms on the slate. There's other games that have higher run totals. Now I could see stacking either one of the teams because. Yeah. Especially maybe a little bit more the Orioles. The Indians, we talked about them they're over the course of the year. They're just a weird team to get a hold on because they don't have any real elite players. But
their first baseman leads off. It's just weird.
Right. And they just don't have a ton of elite fantasy guys, but they just score runs. They nickel and dime you, and then they get a ball to go over, and they're hard outs all the way down the lineup, and that adds up for them over the course of a game. So, I don't know. It's always going to be a problem for me with especially the Indians because I just think they're a little bit overpriced for overall what they're going to do. But yeah, meet in the middle game for me. I can't really get excited either way about it. All right. There's a lot to – we went a little long today. That's all right. There's just so much to cover today. I think the big things we're going to look for, you got to check that weather later on in the day. Make sure right around 5 o'clock-ish you're weighing in on some experts to see what their thoughts are on the weather and what's going to be affected in terms of pitchers. Take a look at some of those stacks. We're gonna monitor the Mariners run line to see if we think that's a little wonky. See where the Bumgarner line goes a little bit. There's a lot to kind of take a look at over the course of the day. Luckily, we have all the way up till 7 to do it, and I think we'll be good. Awesome, man. Any final thoughts?
Put me on the spot. Dozier, Sano, one of them goes yard.
Dozier, Sano, one of them goes yard. I like it. Okay, dude. I'll talk to you again Monday.
All right, see you later, man.
All right, I'm here with Chris Durrell. We're going to talk a little bit of NASCAR this week, and I'm going to try to get through the name of this race here, and bear with me. It is the Combat Wounded Coalition 400 at the Brickyard. Chris, did I do it?
That's it. You got it.
Nice. I nailed it. I practiced a couple times. It's a tongue twister. This is a really long name for a race. How's it going, man?
It's going really good this morning.
Yeah, good. So we're going to talk a little bit about, well, you're going to talk, because I'm not, I don't, you're gonna, you always bring it to me like, I'm a NASCAR noob, which I am completely. So we can get it started here. Give me some of your thoughts on this week's race, and I guess we'll just call it the Brickyard 400.
That's the name that everyone kind of calls it for short.
Thank God. Otherwise, we'd spend the whole podcast just saying the name over and over again.
Exactly.
All right. Give me some of your thoughts on the race coming up this weekend.
Yeah. So this weekend, this Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern. It's the Combat Wounded Coalition 400 at the Brickyard, Brickyard 400 for short, and it's at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, kind of world famous there. It's at Speedway, Indiana, and the track's a 2.5-mile oval super speedway. Now, it's not like other super speedways, Talladega and Daytona, in that there's not. It's really flat. There's only 9-degree banking in the turns. Makes it tough for passing. You get the open wheel cars that are here too at the Indy 500, so it's really low banked in the turns. So it's going to play a little bit different this week. Coming into this race, there's 7 races left before the chase for the Sprint Cup, so things are really starting to tighten up. Dale Earnhardt Jr. actually holds the last point spot right now, which he's probably going to lose this week as he is out of the car again this week with concussion symptoms this week and next week at Pocono. And Jeff Gordon is back. He's
I know that guy. I've heard of him.
88 this week.
All right, yeah. So you just named 2 guys that I've heard of, so that's good. Good start. Yeah. Good start for the podcast here. All right. So Jeff Gordon's back. Does that affect things?
He's not going to collect points for Dale Jr. at all, so that kind of hurts. I don't think he's going to have any trouble coming back into the car being away. He's only been away for, what's it been, like 15 races or so, and he's one of the greatest of all time. The packages are ever-changing. NASCAR is always changing and making tweaks to things, but the package that they're running now, they ran last year at Kentucky and Darlington, and he did quite well in those races. Plus, these 2 tracks this weekend and next weekend at Pocono are 2 of his best, so I really don't see any concern for him. I don't see him contending for a win by any means, but I don't think he's going to have any trouble, you know, staying in that top 20, top 15 for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised to see the 88 in the top 10 either.
So give me your thoughts beyond those 2 guys that I've heard of. I'm sure you're going to lay some guys on me that I've never heard of before. Who are some drivers you're looking at this week?
I am keen in right at the top this week, and I'm actually going to be overweight on both of the top 2, Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch, not just because he's my favorite driver, I'm a little biased there, I know I've wrote about him a few weeks in a row here, but he is one of the best drivers in NASCAR right now. He started the year with 3 wins, kind of tailed off in the summer, and he looks like he's really getting that form back just in time before the chase here. He won this race last year, and in the last 5 years, with 5 races, they race here once a year, He's finished in the top 10 all five times with that win, and three top fives as well with a 5.0 average finish. So he's definitely on my list this week. And then Kevin Harvick, he's one of the most consistent drivers we've got this year. He's only got one win. He leads the point standings, but he's got 15 top 10 finishes. The reason I think he is going to be there this week, he called out his, after a fourth place finish last week, which most drivers would just absolutely love, he called out his crew because they made some mistakes two or three times, called them out on the air. So it depends which way you're taking the narrative this week. I just think the crew is going to give him the best possible pit stops this week and try and get him to victory lane. And just so he's not pissed off, because you don't want Kevin Harvick pissed off.
Yeah, that's interesting, because it strikes me as, you know, sort of like what we talked about with golf. Like, NASCAR is a singular sport, so you're sort of on an island, singular in the sense that it's just you. I mean, I guess your crew makes a little bit of a difference, but there's just a mental component that seems like it maybe comes to play more in a sport like NASCAR or in PGA also, because you're sort of an island. And I like that you factor in those narratives. I don't always do it with other sports like baseball, because I think it's a little too stats driven. But sometimes, you know, some of these sports don't have the advanced stats that some of the else do. And I think those kind of things do matter.
100% agree there.
After those two big guys, is there like a sneakier play down the chain you can think about?
Yeah, so if you're fitting the top two guys in this week, you're gonna definitely need to go stars and scrubs. So one guy kind of in the 6-7K range that I'm gonna have to be able to get me up to both of those guys in the same lineup. Paul Menard this week, I think he might come in under own. He's only got one top 10 here in five races, but it was a win. He's got a 15.0 average finish in those five races, so that's pretty good. I think he's going to be low owned, and he's 7,000, so he fits in nice. And then I'm going to dip down even farther to make some extreme starts and scrubs this week and go with Regan Smith. He's only raced here twice in the last 5 years. 2012 was his last time he's raced here, but he finished in the top five that year, and in those two races in the last five that he's raced, he's got a 10.5 average finish. He's only 5,400, so, you know, I'm really looking for him to start outside the top 30 this week, and, you know, even like a 35th somewhere in there, and I would take a 30th, 25th to 30th place finish for a guy at 5,400 just to get, you know, like 20 DK points, 25 DK points at 5,400 would be excellent.
And I forgot to mention at the top, and I should mention it now, that all Chris's thoughts for picks this weekend for the Brickyard 400 are up on going up on our site later on this afternoon. And included with that, you know, he has some free plays with a bunch of stats and breakdowns of different drivers, but then you can also have a chance to grab some lineups from him in a cheat sheet that gives an even more detailed breakdown. And then just the actual lineups themselves to run on DraftKings. Those are $4.99 each. If you want a little sweat for NASCAR and want to let someone else do the legwork for you, Chris has done it all for us, and he's excellent. So you go over the site, you get his free content, you see that he knows what he's talking about. $4.99 grabs you the lineup and the cheat sheet, and you're all set to go for the race on Sunday. Chris, any final thoughts on, I'm going to do it again, here we go, the Combat Wounded Coalition 400 at the Brickyard. Any final thoughts?
Boom, you nailed it. Just a little bit with the schedule. So today at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, we got the first practice, and then we got final practice today as well at 4 p.m. Eastern, and then we're going to be qualifying tomorrow at 1:45 in the afternoon, and then the race is Sunday. So I'm going to be updating the cheat sheet after both of those practices today. So the cheat sheet will be updated, weighted rankings as well, and then tomorrow again after qualifying. I'll be in the chat room throughout today and tomorrow with any questions. And with the chat room being quite baseball oriented right now, very heavy with that kind of talk, we just throw me a private message and I'll get to any questions you have.
Beautiful, baby. NASCAR all weekend. All right, man, thanks so much. Good luck this weekend. I'll talk to you soon.
Later.
All right, that's it for us today on a Friday. Baseball talk, NASCAR talk. We will be back again on Monday. Good luck with your lineups, everybody. We're DFSR.com, DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. You head over, free content, every sport you can think of, plus a free trial to our projection system for Major League Baseball, NFL coming soon, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. I'm Doug Norrie. This is DFSR. We'll be back again Monday. See you later, everybody.